I'm Stephanie Overbuck.
I'm Mel Wymore.
And this is Pot of Gold.
It's election day today in the United States, and to our American listeners who are able, we hope you're out there voting. And if you haven't already, please vote as if your life depends on it. In the spirit of patriotism this week, we're talking about our national mammal, the American bison, or buffalo. And not just any buffalo, wild idea buffalo.
You really sound like a politician, you know. It's like, because your life depends on it. Because it really does. Anyways, Wild Idea is a family-owned business in South Dakota that has become a model for clean, regenerative, and healthy meat production. We talked to the family about our current system of industrial agriculture and how we can change our relationship with food to be in better balance with the planet and our own bodies.
We've got the whole family on the mic, so here's Dan O'Brien and Jill O'Brien, founders of Wild Idea Buffalo, and their daughter Jillian and son-in-law Colton.
Okay, I'll begin because I'm the oldest. I've been out here since on the prairie, that is, for since 1970. I moved out here from Ohio, actually. It was a bad year to be 19, but I came out here and I went to graduate school, and it didn't take me long to figure out that I needed to be out here on grass. It dawned on me how important the grass was. Of course, I didn't know the science, because really no one knew the science in 70. Basically, you know, if you don't have on the grasslands, if you don't have the grass, you don't have anything. It's all one thing, the insects and the birds. And then finally you get to, you don't have to think about that very long until you come to the idea of buffalo and how it did work itself out before we invaded from Europe. And it wasn't perfect, but it was a hell of a lot more perfect than it is now. And so luckily I have a family now that has drank the Kool-Aid, and I think that really is the defining and the glue that holds a family together. So that's what we're doing here.
And so Dan is kind of the vision maker, and Jill, you basically are Jill of all trades, it sounds like.
Yeah, so Dan had the vision, and I do whatever anybody tells me to as fast as I possibly can. but my emphasis is in the marketing for Wild Idea and help out on the ranch. And Jillian is our general manager and also a gardener extraordinaire. And I should include Colton in that too. But Colton is our ranch manager and then our sourcing manager for Wild Idea Buffalo Company. And what I mean by that is when we harvest buffalo, we don't just harvest from our herd strictly. We also work with like-minded ranchers that have to mirror our template, large landscape grazing, 100% grass-fed. You know, we always take it a step further and insist on a humane field harvest. So Colton works in vetting those people and finding those people. And again, that's part of the education. It's getting more people to buy into that 100% grass-fed.
So that's you're creating a network of food sources. Are they all buffalo or are they other kinds of animals as well?
Yeah, they're all bison and they're all field harvested. We're vertically integrated. We do everything from top to bottom, from raising the animal to shipping it to your front doorstep. Mm.
So what's the difference between a bison and a buffalo?
Nothing.
No. Okay.
And there's a lot of other native populations around too. Is that a?
Yes.
We've done some work with the Pine Ridge Reservation just south of us here. We've been up to Fort Peck and Montana, and actually did kind of an exchange program with them where we came and harvested, I think, 40 head of buffalo, and we exchanged some of the primals for, I think it was hot dogs and some other grind products that went back to the community from the tribal herd that we harvested off of. We've been up to Turtle Mountain, which is clear up on the north end of North Dakota, almost in Canada. Yeah.
Santa Galicia on the Rosebud Reservation in South Dakota.
Yeah, there's a tribal college. It's been a while since we've been down there, but yeah, there's a tribal herd over in Mission, South Dakota that we've harvested quite a little animals off of in the past.
How many animals do you have on altogether?
Our ranch, we have, Colt, maybe you want to speak to that, 900 animals and then, you know, other ranchers.
Oh, yeah. Right now, if you don't count this year, what we've had for calves this year, we're at about 1,000 animals, but that's, it's kind of a static number, you know, because we're mm-hmm. harvesting, usually throughout the fall and winter months, we're harvesting out at our family's ranch. But at any given point on average, we've got about 1,000 head.
So they basically replace themselves every year.
Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah, all the bison that are harvested off our place are born and raised on that ranch. If we ever bring any new animals in, it's usually some sort of breeding stock just to uphold genetic diversity within the herd.
And those bison too, you know, we give them a large landscape for grazing. We allow like 30 to 35 acres based on our herd numbers. So, you know, we're grazing our animals on 30,000 acres of prairie grassland.
Wow. Yeah. I once heard or seen a research on, I think it was Wyoming with reindeer. I'm not quite sure about the animal, but they made a study on how those animals were actually very important to the ecosystem. And basically without them, the state would become a kind of a desert-like state, and through the animal footprints, I don't know how to explain it, you know, maybe you know what I'm talking about better than I do.
Yes, well, if you don't graze, you'll end up with desertification. You know, you need some kind of grazing species on that landscape. But managing how you graze is critical, and Colton, that's your job. And
yeah, our grazing plan is kind of with the assistance of some pretty high-end agronomists that are come and go from the ranch with their consultation. And the idea is to increase or encourage carbon sequestration with rotational grazing. We have pastures on the ranch that stem anywhere from 200 acres to 1,200 acres to 15,000 acres. The larger ones are usually, that's our Forest Service lease. That's it's public land that we pay a seasonal lease on. So when our bigger herd will go out on that lease for about 6 months during the cold season. And it's not unusual to, you know, go a couple months and not see an animal. But if you did the same thing with a beef cow, I think it every single one of them would probably not make it. They'd probably die out there. Whereas the buffalo, you can actually utilize that land even in the winter months. But we do a series of pasture rotations, and then we usually designate two key pastures a year that will do a full year of rest, which is to kind of mimic the migration of bison herds from, you know, centuries ago when they would move across one area in vast numbers, but they might not be back through there for another year. And we've seen an increase in biodiversity as a whole, whether it's ground nesting birds or other fauna, but also we're seeing greater species diversity within the plants as well, ever since we've started to do that. That's how our grazing works. And then there's a lot of parcels of land on one half of our ranch, particularly that Dan, probably 15 years ago, reseeded back to native species, grasses and forbs. He put a mix in there. Prior to that, it was a wheat field, a monoculture with no diversity, and it was getting flipped over every year. So carbon was getting released into the atmosphere, a lot of erosion. So it's really taken the better part of a decade or longer to start seeing some of the results of those seedings. But within the last, 4 or 5 years, we're starting to see those species come up, and diversity is increasing. And kind of like what you were saying, Stephanie, a lot of that could probably be attributed to putting a native herbivore back in its back in an ecosystem where it's vital.
Yeah, you had mentioned, Stephanie, like the hoof action of the reindeer, and the bison, as they're grazing, they're nurturing the soil naturally. through their hooves, and then of course manure. And that's just a symbiotic relationship with that ground. The bison are nurturing the soil, is producing a healthy grassland. That healthy grassland is producing a healthy buffalo, and therefore healthy meat.
I want to kind of zoom out and ask a question just about meat in general, food in general. We've been in the news, been advised to not eat as much red meat, you know, and how many burgers get produced by McDonald's every day. And I wonder if you could just give us a 101 on the difference between eating a quarter pounder from McDonald's and eating a Wild Ideas buffalo burger, and what's the difference to the consumer and also to the planet.
I would love to speak to that. I'm sure everybody does, but the Big Mac or whatever you were referring to, any other kind of confined burger, confined feeding operation burger, or even an Impossible-like burger, comes with a big fat IOU. And the Wild Idea Buffalo Burger doesn't come with an IOU. You know, we've been trained to buy food based on quicker, cheaper, faster. So all we see is that upfront dollar sign. And there's just a big veneer with all of these hidden costs. And with Wild Idea Buffalo Company Burger, you may pay more up front, but there is no hidden veneer. There are no hidden costs. There is no IOU. And I think people forget about that. If we were actually charging what we should be charging for that confined animal feeding operation burger or some processed industrialized agriculture vegetarian burger, the costs are enormous. And, you know, Dan and Colton and Julian, we could all just start rattling them off, from species loss to environmental depletion through carbon emissions, through prairie plowup, that 70 to 80% of our crops grown in this country are grown to feed animals in confinement. That is just a losing proposition. How about human health, diabetes, healthcare issues? We eat crap and then we medicate ourselves for eating the crap. And that's just crazy. We're polluting our water systems. We're saturating the earth with pesticides and herbicides. I had a friend say something about we wash fruit to wash off the pesticides or herbicides. And I said nothing. They're in it. They're not on top of it. It's inside of there. So I think Michael Pollan coined the phrase, you are what you eat, and you are what you eat eats too. And even if it's a tomato or something like that, it's being given pesticides and herbicides, that's just going up into the tomato. It's in there.
I think too, if you're just focusing on the dollar figure and not the environmental impact, which is huge and we should be focusing on that. But I mean, the consumer's really paying for that one quarter pounder three times, because they're paying it for subsidies and the taxes that's going to the farmers, paying for the actual quarter pounder, and then they're paying for it at the doctor's office when they're, you know, because they're obese, diabetic, cancer, and the list goes on. So it's time you add it all up, ours is probably cheaper just from a dollar figure.
So could we actually feed the United States population with this large-scale grass-fed farm methodology? Would it be possible to produce that much food?
Yes, I believe so. First of all, we eat too much meat. I don't have any idea how old you guys are, but I remember the roast chicken on Sunday or the pot roast on Sunday. It was a big deal. It was a big deal. Now we eat meat breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That's crazy. We should not be doing that. That's destructive. But if we switch to eating 100% grass-fed, grass-finished, even better, humanely field-harvested meat less regularly, we would still get more nutrients, because that meat is so much richer and so much healthier for you. And then along with that, you know, a plant-based, healthy grains diet. So yes, I think we could feed the world. And I think they're proving that.
And you know, I'm working on an essay right now. It's very difficult for me to write, but this idea of meat substitute being raised or being built actually out of vegetables, and I love vegetables, don't get me wrong, but I bought a package of it a week or two ago and I ate it, and I read the label and it said, don't worry, you know, basically this is not meat, this is peas mung beans. And I instantly went to, where did those peas and mung beans come from? Well, there were great acreages that were plowed up to raise those beans. And that is a destruction that is almost unredeemable. If we plow up one extra acre because we're trying to stay away from grass-fed meat, it's a sin.
Right. But not eating meat is not the answer. Just eat less of it and really, really know where it comes from. And I think we owe it to the animal. I mean, not everybody in New York City, but, you know, we owe it to know where that animal was raised and the life that it lived, to look at it in the eyes before we consume it, to nourish our bodies. We owe it to that animal to do that. Without grazing species, we won't have healthy grasslands. Without healthy grasslands, we can't, we can sequester carbon, but grasslands are the number two carbon sequester on the planet. So we have to keep them intact. We can't just not graze them. And if we don't harvest any animals for food, well, then they will be overgrazed and we will have depleted the soil. And you might as well just put a plow in there. Same thing. So it's important to harvest animals for food, but it should be done on a lot lower scale.
I actually have a question for Jillian, and this goes to kind of the other end of the spectrum, which is the marketplace. Who's buying your products? And do you notice a trend in the type of person that's buying your products, consuming the Wild Idea products? And what can we do to expand that market, or, you know, make more people interested?
It tends to be older people, you know, mid-50s and higher, usually in the upper income class. And we're trying to gain younger customers by that education piece and being transparent and telling our story. And sometimes I feel it's hard to do without, you know, pointing the finger and you know, showing how industrial agriculture works. You know, it's easy because we're in it and we get to see it. But for people who are not really interested in agriculture, you know, it's challenging to grab their attention. And show them that there are alternatives and different ways and better ways. So I think that is part of our biggest challenge.
You know, as part of that storytelling, you know, every word has been hijacked. So we talk about our regenerative ranching practices. We talk about grass-fed, grass-finished. A lot of those things can be used on labels that are simply not true. You know, and there's commercials that are just beautiful. And they talk about regenerative agriculture. There's, you know, from dairy farms to beef plants to chicken farms that talk about regenerative agriculture. There's 500 chickens under a movable house and they're moving it from one spot of grass to the next. That ain't regenerative agriculture. You know, ask the chicken how they feel about that, you know? So it's just, you know, you almost have to have a PhD in where your food comes from, and that's too bad. But those are some of our challenges, and yes, as Jillian said, we do need younger folks, and I think people that are really concerned about what they're putting in their children's mouths. We do have those young families because food is medicine, and you know, it's a big deal.
You know, you mentioned some challenge, and we wonder what are your big challenges, such that if the listener listening into the podcast could participate in shifting the minds of people, in changing habits, in broadening these markets, what could we do for you, either politically or, you know, in terms of our personal behaviors? How can we help the cause of sustainable farming in general?
You know, I think it comes back to that IOU, you know, to express to your listeners that, yes, this might be more expensive, but it's short term, and it comes with a huge IOU. This product might cost more, but you're saving your health. No prescriptions from the pharmacy. You're saving the planet. And those things should be really important to everybody. Everybody's got a dog in that fight.
Which we're, you know, what we're talking about here, I believe, is a sacrament. And I'm not a particularly religious person, but in every culture I've ever had anything to do with, there is a notion of you know, taking this stuff into your body and thanking whatever it is that you thank. And I think that we try to do that at Wild Idea on a daily basis. It is a sacrament. It's not just pouring through the drive-in and grabbing a cheeseburger. This is too important for that.
You know, when we think about it, even on a broader basis beyond food, everything that we need comes from the earth. Everything that we need comes from the earth. And I can't remember who said it, but you know, soil is the foundation of that, and we should quit treating it like dirt.
Just in the final sense, do you have a vision or a timeline? Or I notice, Dan, that you have yourself a fairly prominent political statement on your hat there. What do you envision for us in the future in terms of, you know, the next step?
Politics is so very important in what we're talking about right now. And excuse my French, but the fucking idiot that is our president right now is flying in the face of everything we're talking about here. He's the most dangerous man that there ever was, because we're talking about the whole ballgame here. Walk out on the Paris climate treaty? What? That's insane. It's insane. And so, you know, we got to take the gloves off. This is existential.
Yeah, leadership that doesn't believe in science is not a good path for the country. It's a dead end road. And come November, hope it changes.
Yeah. And on that note, you know, if you eat food, you can be part of the problem or part of the solution. It goes for everything too that you purchase, right? So vote with your mouth. I mean, literally, and November 2nd, too. I'm sorry.
November 3rd. All good. You guys are really beautiful to talk to as a family, and it's so clear that you love what you're doing, and you're doing something really meaningful for all of us. So thank you so much. We really are honored to have you all together speaking with us. All right, let's chat about McDonald's. So when Jill talked about box meat, I think she called it box fed meat or something like that, I finally came to realize what she meant was the animals are raised in a crate.
Mm-hmm. One of the most cruel ways to raise an animal.
And she actually said not only do the cows live in crates, but 90% of the buffalo also live in crates. Like, we just farm animals in crates. So if you want to eat free-range food, I guess, or grass-fed, free-range, and grass-finished, I'm not sure what that meant either, you pretty much have a very few choices.
Right, but then don't get fooled by the website, which basically shows you sort of a dance with the wolf image, and sells you box mead.
Oh, you mean don't get fooled by other websites?
Yes. I mean, no, their website they have beautiful
dances
images
with wolves too, but it's real. I mean, wow. I mean, I wanted to ask how many people one buffalo could feed.
I guess you can find that in the internet, but but we could easily crunch the numbers, like how many buffaloes does New York City need, per day.
But you also have to cut down the consumption.
And then this comes back to the consciousness issue, and I think Jill was very, very conscious about that issue, because she was the cook who became the farmer. And I also thought his story of basically being a biologist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Seeing that there was a problem with birds, and then from that becoming a farmer, super interesting. Really, people who walk their talk.
No kidding. And when they said vertically integrated, I mean, they do everything from raising those bison all the way to shipping that to your front door. That's a very rare business today. And it's almost the opposite model of almost every business out there that they're competing with. And that's another question we didn't ask, is competition. You know, how do they make it? And I guess they're just cultivating a particular consumer, and that just keeps happening.
No, actually, we did ask that. What is the audience, right? And the audience basically are, let's say, rich Americans who can basically afford it, which shouldn't be that way. I mean, they are pointing that that is an issue. It is more expensive. And I think we had that issue before in the permaculture episode, where we were talking about organic food. Organic food is, yes, it is more expensive, but at the same time, it is more healthy, and it doesn't come with all the rat tails. But it's very hard to put a figure on it, you know, like a cost. How much more does the industrialized food cost us? Very, very difficult. Jill points to it when she said, or she explains it very early in the beginning, about the hidden costs of meat within the meat and, you know, the meat
of
industry.
Anything. She was really good with externalized costs. You know, like that idea that you buy something and it seems cheap, but it comes with a giant IOU, and you just don't know what that IOU has behind it. You know, whether it's the planet or your personal health or the health of your community or, you know, an exploited population that's out there. And I think that's what we're trying to get at, is how do we make these costs transparent in a way that changes our behavior, that makes us look at that price tag
right
for real?
So for the moment, all there is you as an individual decide, is this good for me or not? There is nobody out there really who guarantees you transparency.
Right.
Except those little farms. And I think we know a couple of milk dairy farms. I think, isn't it Sweden, who they openly give their process on the internet for everyone to check out how they do and what they do and where the ingredients from. And there are firms like this, you know, or farmers like that, who really make sure that you as a consumer basically have that transparency, and then you stick with them. I stick with them.
Yeah, but also I think, you know, to what Padraig was saying in his episode about entrepreneurs showing new innovations, and what we saw with Sebastian and soil sequestration through measurement, and then what we're seeing with Christian and measuring air pollution. I think those are all aspects of transparency, and they may be just beginning little teeny seeds of how an economy could develop where we have much more transparency on our products. In fact, blockchain would allow you to verify the supplier of each product that's manufactured all the way down to the soil. And that would be really cool. So I could see a future where ways of making our food and water and consumer products really transparent and allowing us to make strong, healthy consumer decisions could happen.
Absolutely. The question, however, is whether, I mean, that for sure would help on the way to become also more conscious about what you eat. And hopefully it would shift towards that more and more people consume or go that path than the current highway of industrialized food. And maybe that would also switch the cost of it.
It would. But I also think there is kind of a little bit of a conundrum when we're dealing with this rich-poor gap as well, because you have this, you know, growing resource disparity where people are less and less able to make those choices when the good product is so expensive, right? And so we've got to attack this problem at both ends, both the transparency and the environmental protection and the kind of doing the production right by Earth and by each other. And then we also have to rise the incomes and the wealth of people who can't afford to be they might be conscious, but they simply can't afford it. You know, if you can get a burger and fries for $1.50 and you're looking at a $12 buffalo meal, you're going to pick the burger and fries for $1.50. And we need to address that side too.
We're an independent, listener-supported podcast.
Thanks to our producer, Riley Paul.
Support us by rating this episode and sharing with all your friends.
And to learn more, join us at potofgold.world.
I'm Stephanie Overbach.
And I'm Mel Wymore.
Thanks for listening.